This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
We get the best start to the day because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
I'm feeling it. I am feeling it. Ben, give it to me. Give it to me, Ben.
Yes.
Inject it into my veins. Yes, here we go. Here we go. Welcome in, everybody.
It's my favorite spiritual song.
Welcome in, everybody, on a Wednesday.
Painted 12 Pendergast. And 11.
Give
That's
it to
right.
Us,
the first number is bigger than the second
That's
one.
That's right, man. That's
Hardcore
right.
sports fans know what that means. Winning record.
Winning record for the Stros, baby, for the first time since the first week of the season. Let's do
since
this.
1927.
First time since 1927. 12-11, man, after last night, took the Blue Jays to the woodshed again.
We're living in Fat City, Houston.
They're beating some good pitchers in this little stretch here. Chris Bassett had been awesome this year.
I got to find out who the color commentator is for the Blue Jays because he's hilarious.
I'll find out for you.
He was disgusted with he was describing that first inning where, you know, the Astros, you know, they got some soft contact profit there.
Continue. I got to find out if this is their TV guy or their radio guy.
He was indignant at all the soft contact. And I felt like it was a little insulting to Altuve, who Altuve did hit. It was a really hard hit ball, the first base that got past Will Wagner. Largely there were a lot of bloops that went the Astros' way yesterday, which helps when you're a team that routinely also loads up the bases and does nothing with it.
Yeah.
So I don't mind. I make no excuses for them profiting off of soft contact when, they do at least put themselves in position for grand slams quite regularly.
Yeah, they do. They've got to be the only Major League Baseball team, the Astros, whose cleanup hitter gets on base the first two at-bats with little squibbers in the infield.
Yeah.
Take that,
yeah.
Baseball. We're changing the game. We're putting our speedy infield single ground ball dude at cleanup, and we ain't even apologizing for it.
And we're also, as a fan base, really rapidly turning towards one that dreads seeing the bases loaded.
Yeah.
I'm like, no, oh, crap, the bases are loaded.
We're really bad with the bases loaded.
Oh, and there's one out. That's it. All right, I'm going to go to the bathroom.
Okay, their TV color commentator is Buck Martinez.
Oh, okay.
Older guy, was a catcher in the big leagues for a long time.
Yeah,
now, their radio guy. I thought their radio guy is Chris LaRue, who's hilarious. Some of their commentary for their radio team has wound up on the internet at times.
Yeah.
And I've been like, I like this crew right here. This is a good crew, this Chris LaRue guy for Toronto.
The radio play-by-play guy also says oot. That's an oot for Altuve. Yeah.
Tip of the hat to the Canadians. I like it. So 5-1.
That means
less.
Out.
Yeah.
I'm bilingual.
Yeah,
I speak Canadian
translate
English
for
and,
people.
So and American English.
We're in Texas, man. So the Astros are 12-11. Haven't even looked at the standings because it's not relevant right now. Just start winning baseball games, and that's what they're doing. Four out of their last five, two in a row. Again, they go for three in a row. The unprecedented mountaintop of three in a row tonight. A little bit of an early start, 6:40 start, which gives us a little bit of room in between that and the Rockets game, which is later on. So tonight's a good sports night, man. Astros going for the sweep, and we got a little game two action with the Rockets and the Warriors. Nice Wednesday night for us.
Astros are in the wild card right now.
They are. If the season ended today, we would be dancing in the postseason.
That huge, huge win that put them into a winning record puts them a half game ahead of the Toronto Blue Jays.
The aforementioned. I like it. Big story last night, I guess, from this game would be you got a really good start from Ronel Blanco. This was great to see. Blanco was excellent last year for most of the season, had his little hiccups along the way. But at this juncture of the season last year, he was their only good pitcher. You know, their record this time of year, their record through 23 games last year was 6-17. 12-11 feels like we're getting ready to to start the ALCS or something like that. And Blanco pitched into the seventh inning last night, which he hasn't come close to doing this season. Yeah. That was really, really good to see.
And when I try to be a really annoying baseball fan who acts like nothing ever matters in the present moment, I remind myself that, all right, that they're not going to all hit below 200 for the entire season.
Right.
The offensively, it really can't be any worse than it had been at the start of the season. Nope. And yet here they sit with a winning record. Yeah. So I've tried real hard not to be over alarmed by the poor hitting, but as long as the pitching can sustain, because they're one of the best pitching staffs in the league right now, that these things will balance out.
I feel like of the things that make the three things that you look at with a baseball team: offense, defense, and pitching. The thing that's the most variable, fluctuating, witchcraft stuff that just you go through phases and you just know it's going to come back is the offense. That they're pitching well and their defense is pretty good too. Like, those things feel more sustainable. You're absolutely right. Like, I jotted this down when Yiner got a hit last night. I'm like, okay, that looks like the Yiner we saw all last year. Like, if honestly, even if just two of these guys that are hitting below or around 200 right now start hitting a little bit and the pitching and the defense hold up the way it has, which I expect it to, they're going to win this division. You know, like, it's not a great division. Hell, it's not a great league right now, the American League. It's very jumbled and cluttered, and you know, the Yankees losing Garrett Cole before the season or early in the season, whatever it was. Like, there have been things that have brought the good teams back to the pack a little bit. So I'm optimistic about this. Here was Joe Espada last night on the performance of Ronel Blanco.
Yeah, you know what I thought today, like, stuff wise has been his best all season. Fastball up to 96. The depth on his slider was great, and he used more his curveball to get quick outs in the first couple of innings. I thought his stuff was outstanding. He pounded the zone. He was efficient. That was a strong performance by Ronel Blanco.
Ronel Blanco and Christian Walker. Those are the two big stories from last night for me.
Yeah, and Blanco,
Walker's three for three. Yeah, go ahead.
I started getting a little tired of his off-season preparation being different as an excuse. He usually plays in the Dominican during Winter League, and he didn't do that this year. At the team prodded him not to play because, hey, he's a starter now. You gotta sustain yourself for a long season. I was getting to the point where I was like, okay, was part of the did he suck in winter ball? Mm-hmm. I don't was having a six plus ERA part of his preparation, because you've been through spring training, you've been through the first part of the regular season. His changeup, which had been a strength, had just been a mess for him. And yeah, whatever it took and however tweaking his offseason preparation may have affected him, it's time, and it looks like he's getting back on track.
Yeah. Christian Walker, three hits last night. He'd been moved down in the order. Pena's been batting cleanup the last few days. It would have been interesting. DiCenzo did not get the start last night like Espada had said he would two nights ago. DiCenzo was their offensive star in the 7-0 win to open this series. But he jammed a thumb sliding into one of the bases that night, so they chose to sit him out last night. So Christian Walker would have been interesting to see where they were going to plug DiCenzo into the lineup there. I can't imagine Walker sitting two nights in a row, given that he's their highly paid first baseman who's been batting cleanup every night, every day since the start of the season.
Well, so you know, Stat Nerd Seth would tell you any idiot knows that Christian Walker's ex-Wobicon had been one of the best in his career right now.
What is ex-Wobicon? I hear that all the time.
No, whatever, Sean. Okay, for the people who don't know, expected weighted on base. On contact, that's what it is.
Oh,
it's
okay.
It's one of those advanced stats that when you do make contact, where's it going? How hard does it hit? Yeah. We know he's been making hard contact and he's been swinging hard. It's not all just bad luck. He's had a lot of strikeouts too.
Yep.
But he is one of those guys that there are a lot of things you could point to and say, all right, it's not as bad as the numbers look. He's got to figure some things out, but it started to come back around.
I get distracted with ex-Wobicon because it has the word bacon in it, and it gets me hungry when I see it.
I know.
Yeah.
I know. Yeah.
Especially I didn't eat today, so yeah.
You know what Statner and Seth would also tell you?
I can't get enough of Statner and Seth.
Remember when Statner and Seth was trying to tell you that, hey, sure, Yiner is 0 for 33 or whatever he was at one, or 2 for 33.
Yeah.
His pitch framing had been really, really good. Yeah. He's back down in the basement on pitch framing.
Is he? Okay.
I think maybe there's only – you can only have one.
Okay.
He can either be good at framing pitches as a catcher, or he can hit the baseball. You have to choose.
I choose hit the baseball, but I have a feeling you sneaky want him to just be a good pitch framer.
I do. I want to be able to come in and rail against all of the dullards who don't care about pitch framing.
Yes. Texts are coming in early. Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer text line. Last night felt like the complete Strohs. Big left on base numbers and still winning is a great place
yes.
to be. That's from Irwin. Well,
the other part, too, is Jeremy Pena is making these jump throws look almost routine. It's once per game. He's leaping 3 feet in the air and just seamlessly transferring the ball and getting the ball to first place to where it looks like it's no big deal. And you remind yourself, oh, yeah, they got to have that. Paredes had a really nice throw to first.
Yeah, like, he did.
They've got to have that if the offense isn't going to come up in the clutch.
Well, and if the pitcher, like Ronel Blanco was pitching to contact last night. He only struck out 3 guys.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah, some of those choppers. It was on soft. Both those plays were on soft contact.
Yeah.
The Paredes one and the bat. Not to mention that bloop to right center where Jeremy Pena narrowly avoided 7 other defensive players.
Well,
I don't even know. They feel like the entire infield and outfield was out there trying to catch that ball.
Think about that description. Without seeing the play, Jeremy Pena and Cam Smith, your right fielder, almost ran into each other.
I was like, wait a second. Okay, I think that's Brendan Rodgers. And we've got a Jake Myers in the situation as well.
Dude. I thought he
did have 4 players converging on the ball, and in right center, the shortstop is the guy who
catches a juggling catch. Yeah. It confused Callis. Callis thought it bounced and hit the ground because the ball squirted up in the air. Like, oh, he caught that. Yeah.
It was like trying to be the eyewitness at a car crash, at a 7-car crash, where you're like,
thank God it wasn't.
The Ford Fiesta was careening out of control.
Cam Smith and Jeremy Pena closing on each other. That happened, I can't remember when it was. Last couple of years, there was a play in left field. Astro fans will remember seeing it because it was harrowing. It was like watching a car crash where Jeremy Pena and Yordan Alvarez ran into each other, like smack dab into each other in left field. And just both of them were splattered on the ground. And as I'm watching that play last night, I'm going, not again, not with Cam Smith.
It was scary, man.
Because you couldn't
process it. It really was way more human beings than there should have been.
That play was as encouraging as any with Cam Smith in right field that he's made where he's actually catching the ball. Because that was incredible self-awareness for him to just kind of look up and go, this is Jeremy's ball. Like, the angle we were watching it at on TV made it look like a crash was inevitable, when in fact, Cam Smith had kind of bowed out at just the right time of it. Cam Smith played a...
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Good right field for this team, man. He had some good catches last night again. He covers so much ground out there.
His upside is really, really good.
Yeah,
You try to not put too many expectations or pressure on a guy who's so young and has so little experience. But man, everything about him and the way he operates just feels like that classic, the baseball player.
Yep.
That's just calm, cool, and collected, steady as she goes. He's going to take the highs and the lows with the same approach. It's fun to watch him develop.
You can see the mental part and the how he handles things. Listening to interviews, you can see why Dana Brown thought he was ready for this. You know, when you kind of watch him operate. All right, that was fun last night, man. It's nice having the Stros winning again. That's good. Four out of their last five. All right, to the Texans we go. Draft Nuggets. We ridiculed a draft nugget from Schefter yesterday. Does this one from Albert Breer have a little more teeth to it? And how would we feel if this is the direction the Texans are going in the draft? You won't want to miss this. We'll get to that coming up next.
Championship or nothing. You ain't bring me here to win no division or no conference. So if I'm here to help win the Super Bowl, that's gonna be the, you know, the reason. But I think people know. A lot of people look at this team is like, oh, you know, they got a lot of great pieces. But me to you, I think it's more than just a lot of great pieces. You have a great culture here, great organization. I think the more you fill this up with winners, not just me. Coach D'Amico was a winner. Dart Runner Darby was a winner. Will was a winner. So you just fill the room up with winners. I think you're going to get what you want, and I think we're going to get it real soon.
That was C.J. Gardner-Johnson, who met with the media yesterday, who will play more audio from him later in the show. They have brought
I didn't
in...
know if it was C.J. Gardner-Johnson or Beck.
Yeah.
I'm a driver. I'm a winner.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it's in his DNA, damn it.
Yeah, it is. They brought in another good press conference guy in C.J. Gardner-Johnson.
That's like Jimmy. You had pointed this out. Kind of like Jimmy Ward. He does the press conferences really well. Which obviously you want the performance on the field and maybe in the ability to stay healthy. That helps a lot.
Yeah.
But yeah, I enjoyed C.J. Gardner-Johnson.
He's
yesterday.
Like Jimmy and Ward with health and a cool hat.
Yeah, his hat. He's got a Cam Ward hat.
Yeah, yeah. Cam Newton.
Cam Newton. Damn it. Retract any future dings.
Dude, I was driving in this morning. Not even driving in. I left my apartment this morning, and before I even got in my truck, I didn't use a single key fob. I went down to the first floor of my building accidentally. Didn't get off at the right floor. Used the wrong key fob to get out of the garage. Turn the radio volume down when I meant to turn the air conditioner down in my truck. Like, I did three things where I did it wrong. I'm like, it's going to be a long day for Seth today, man. It's going to be a long day.
Oh, yeah, without you as my backstop. Yeah.
Yeah. So,
don't worry. You caught that.
Yeah.
Somehow, yeah. There's only so many people that would have realized that I said, that Cam Ward wouldn't make any sense at all in that moment.
Because he mentioned Cam Newton when he got asked about the hat, C.J. Gardner-Johnson. That helped. So we'll hear more. I play that because we'll hear more from him. If you're wondering what he's saying at the beginning, because it came in kind of, you know, he was kind of monotone in the beginning. He said championship or nothing. That's what he said. I would imagine C.J. Gardner-Johnson is, you know, when he hears D'Amico Ryans talking about taking this franchise to new heights and getting to the AFC title game, is like, no, man, we're winning the AFC title game and we're winning the Super Bowl. I don't know if
I'll tell you what.
And saw who I was playing for last year. It was the Eagles. All right.
Honestly, there's one thing I noticed just from college and in the NFL, there is definitely some kind of undefinable value or addition by having multiple guys on your team who have won championships.
Because mm-hmm.
there's kind of a certain, you want as many guys as possible who have seen that the hard work pays off, that it's not just some lofty promise or something.
Yeah.
So it's almost like they're giving an eyewitness report from heaven itself.
Yeah.
Like if somebody could come back and be like, hey, no, it's really true. Everything they're telling you, it's true.
Yeah.
It really is.
Keep praying.
I've seen it.
I can't
explain it, but I can. But it's true.
Yeah.
There is a lot of value to that, and guys that have been through kind of some of the highs and the lows. You look at Philadelphia last year; they got off to a slow start defensively. People were wondering, all right, well, what the hell? Thanks a lot, Vic Fangio.
Exactly.
Yeah, I guess you're really going to turn this thing around.
Mm-hmm.
So as many guys as possible that you can have in the locker room who've seen the upside of putting in all the hard work and everything, it does help.
All right, so Albert Breer had his draft notebook emptying column yesterday. He did one Monday, he did one yesterday. This is what caught the attention of a lot of Texan fans. And keep in mind, we had Adam Schefter doing his draft notebook emptying at the beginning of the week, and his nugget on the Texans was, Nick Caserio makes a lot of trades on draft weekend. Thanks a lot. Hadn't noticed. This is Albert Breer. Just basically said Nick Caserio makes – he gave us the number of trades that Nick Caserio's made and said, expect him to make some trades.
Yeah,
thanks.
Schefter did the same thing. Like, oh, word then, is. The
no,
that,
that's what I'm talking about. That's what I'm talking about.
Oh, Schefter. Okay,
yeah.
Well, Breer says it, too.
Breer's has a little more teeth in it, I think.
Yeah.
A little bit more. This is what Breer says. Speaking of linemen – we have another team that has at least started sniffing around on a trade up, and that's the Houston Texans. Okay, so that That actually denotes some activity that's taking place right now. He says it's no secret that Houston needs offensive line help, and I'd expect the Texans to target strong character players as they continue to remake that room. Now, keep in mind, Breer was the one that reported the toxic environment in the offensive line room back when the Texans started making all the Tunsil trade and all the other moves they made. So he says, I'd expect the Texans to target strong character players as they continue to remake that room. With the possibility that Will Campbell, Armon Membu, and Kelvin Banks are all gone inside the top 10, the next group of linemen could get moved up the board a bit, and the Texans have two teams in front of them, the Packers and the Vikings, that could take an offensive lineman. Thanks to the Tunsil trade, the Texans have three picks on day two to work with. They're without a fourth and a sixth rounder. He finishes by saying this, I could see where that sets up for a short move up, potentially to try to land someone like Zabel, or it's Gray Zabel from North Dakota State, or if they're feeling froggy and including picks from next year, 2026, maybe a more significant move up for Kelvin Banks. One player that he's heard the Texans have done a lot of work on is Donovan Jackson, who's from Houston, out of Ohio State. So that where I feel like, Seth, there's a little more oomph to what Breer is saying, is that he's actually saying he's hearing that the Texans are kicking tires on picks above them right now.
Right, and they're considering trading up. And I think a lot of people first hear that, and the immediately you think, well, okay, there's also a lot of reports that there's not a lot of appetite for moving up in this draft because of the perceived weakness or lack of top tier guys. It all gets really interesting because then, okay, perhaps the price ends up being lower than what you might expect to move up if there's not a lot of appetite for it. And I'm glad you brought up Tunsil and the picks they got back from Tunsil. I myself find myself saying I want quantity. I don't want to trade away all these picks. I'd like as many picks as possible. And yet, part of being aggressive in rebuilding the offensive line and trying to replace Laremy Tunsil and these other guys is also, okay, Tunsil himself and letting him go, you got draft picks for him. I don't have an issue with using those draft picks to really get the offensive line prospect that you want.
Yeah.
It becomes almost part of the Laremy Tunsil trade itself.
Yes. Yeah. Were you right? Exactly. Well, let's look at the last two drafts, Seth, the last two off seasons, and we're starting to get a body of work on Nick Caserio, right? He's done four drafts now. This is his fifth draft as GM of the Texans. And the behavior in the last two drafts would indicate that if Nick has extra picks to play with, even premium picks, he's making moves that make the team better immediately. The Will Anderson trade in 2023, he had an extra first the following year. He had the second round pick he mixed into that deal. He had no problem mixing extra premium draft capital into a deal to go get a guy he coveted. In 2024, they picked up that extra two from Minnesota for moving back from 23 to 42. He didn't stick around and use that pick in the second round. That pick would have been this year. He didn't wait for that pick. He took it and flipped it for Stephon Diggs. Now, you can say what you want about the Diggs trade, whether you thought it was good or bad or whatever. I'm just telling you what happened. And so, If I take those two things, again, small sample size, it's two deals. It could have been two very specific things. But the fact of the matter is Nick Caserio has had extra first and second round picks to operate with the last two off seasons, and he didn't stick around and use those. He used them as draft picks. He used them in trades to go get guys he wanted. So I could very well see them taking at least one of those at least one of the third rounder this year and the extra second rounder next year and mixing it into a deal to go get somebody they really, really like up in the teens, let's say.
Yeah, I think that's one thing that Nick has demonstrated, that he's not afraid to raise people's eyebrows when it comes to how much he gives up for a player they really want. The Will Anderson trade was one of the most aggressive trades in recent NFL history for a non-quarterback, and that ended up working out really well. The Stephon Diggs trade, you're right, that was aggressive. Didn't work out because of injury. I mean, in terms of Stephon Diggs, despite the offense being way below expectations, the offense got much worse after Stephon Diggs got injured last year. So Stephon Diggs' presence did make an impact on that offense. There was just so much other stuff that was bad that it didn't yield the overall results.
Mm-hmm.
I think with this draft class, you look at some of the offensive linemen or at the other players, I think there's a lot of teams that might have Josh Simmons on their board in the first round, the offensive tackle out of Ohio State.
Yep.
There's a good chance the Texans don't look at him as draftable in the first round.
Just
because
of
maturity concerns, the knee, everything else like that.
Yeah.
So they'd rather be aggressive. There might be other teams that think, oh, okay, cool. If we were picking 25 and Josh Simmons was there, we'd take him. The Texans might not feel that way.
Mm-hmm.
I think the names that we've heard from credible plugged-in people most often, including Jonathan Alexander, who had a tidbit about Kelvin Banks the other day. So Kelvin Banks, the offensive tackle out of Texas, we've heard his name a lot. We've heard Tyler Booker a boatload.
Yeah.
We've heard Donovan Jackson a fair amount. Those are the three offensive linemen that we've seen, I think, tied to the Texans most frequently.
I would throw Simmons in there, too. We've seen in mock draft. But you're saying people in the know maybe.
Yeah,
not so
kind
much.
Of like
yeah,
the
yeah,
people
yeah.
where I think, like, oh, okay. Like Daniel Jeremiah has brought up names and with enough, you know, Daniel Jeremiah is not a hot take guy.
Yeah.
I feel like that's coming from a place of substance.
No doubt. I shouldn't have brought up Simmons. You're right. Simmons has been in a lot of mock drafts from people whose opinion I'm just like, I think these are just, I could put a mock draft the same as this guy.
Right,
you know,
right.
Like
yeah.
that kind of thing. Daniel Jeremiah, speaking of him, had this to say. I think it was with Mina Kimes. He was on Mina Kimes' podcast. This is the second time he's talked about the Texans tying them to this player.
But what if they added Emeka Ubuka?
CJ Stroud might have something to say about that. I don't know. CJ would like, I would like to be a little better protected than I was last year, but I wouldn't mind throwing to my friend in Emeka Ubuka.
I think you need for them.
Yeah, I think I would have to take Banks. I have a little higher grade on Ubuka. It's close, but I don't see how they leave that round without an offensive lineman. So I'm going to go offensive lineman.
Okay.
I was told the Houston Texans will not pass on Banks if he was there.
Okay, so there you go. So I was told they won't pass on Banks if he's there.
Yeah, and you know, Jonathan Alexander's had some nice little tidbits as of late that have worked out in terms of him talking about guys they like or moves they might be considering. So when Jonathan Alexander says that the team really likes Kelvin Banks, I think that's coming from a place of substance. So And this goes back to, okay, Nick Caserio says that they don't draft for need. I do think that part of when he says that is that I think he means they're not going to stretch because of need. They're not going to take a guy that perhaps they have graded lower just because they need a guy. But I think they 100% and he will trade to a spot in the draft where they have a need and they really like the guy.
Yeah,
and Kelvin Banks might end up being that guy.
And that's okay. You know,
yeah.
like, and that's fine. I think Texan fans, if they... Okay, reaction at the draft party on Thursday night, if the Texans trade their second rounder they got from the Tunsil trade to move up 10 spots, to move up to 15,
spots?
To move up to 15 and take Kelvin Banks.
That's that trade value works out, doesn't
it? I don't have the chart in front of me. I'm saying like gut feel, because nobody's going to have a chart out of the draft party.
No, you know? I think that for one, and you know how it goes from draft reaction. Okay, Kelvin Banks has a name that's recognizable. He's been talked about a lot. This is key for me. I always like to know how does the actual fan base feel about a player?
Mm-hmm.
Because sometimes...
Oh, the UT fan base you're talking about.
Yeah. So the UT fan, a college fan base.
Yeah.
I really like to know how a college fan base feels about a player. And... UT, every time I ask Longhorns about how they feel about Kelvin Banks, they love him.
Yeah.
You know, and he's been doing it for a long time. I think we know this with Nick. He likes guys with a body of work.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the reasons that he hasn't taken smaller school guys, I think, is that it's not that he doesn't think they can be good. He just feels better about being able to watch a lot of really good film versus really good opponents. And Kelvin Banks has that. So I think that people would be pretty excited about it.
Yeah, I do too. And
Banks also can play guard or tackle.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's a stretch or a reach that you're – it's not – who was the original versatile dirty V-word, the guard that got moved around all over the place?
Oh, it wasn't Xavier Suafilo.
Suafilo, yeah.
Was it?
Xavier
Suafilo. Yeah.
Remember, Xavier Suafilo played like four different positions.
Yeah.
It was a mess.
Yep.
It wouldn't be like that. I think they would probably settle in on – maybe starting him out at guard and seeing how he does and give him all the reps there. I don't think they'd move him around a lot trying to figure out what he can do.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Wednesday. Draft is a day away. We've got one more sleep until the draft, and that'll be tomorrow. We've got you covered all weekend long here on Sports Radio 610, beginning with the first round on Thursday night, second and third rounds on Friday night, and then all day Saturday with rounds 4 through 7. You can hear it all right here on Sports Radio 610. Headlines up next. Astros, they're hot right now. We'll hear more from some of the new Texans that spoke yesterday and the Rockets back in action, trying to even their series tonight. We'll get to all of that in headlines coming up next.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines, presented by Men's Tea Clinic.
Hey, let's do some headlines here. Payne and Pendergast with you on a Wednesday. Astros beat the Blue Jays last night. That was good to see. The big story in that game. Rennell Blanco pitches into the seventh inning. Really efficient outing by Rennell Blanco last night. Gave up a home run, a solo home run to the nine-hole hitter. The only run he gives up, he's perfect through eight batters, 3 2/3 innings, and then gives up a bomb to the nine-hole guy, to Lutz or whoever it was, the nine-hole guy. But he straightened things out, ends up pitching into the seventh, and the Astros bullpen steers the ship into the shore. And Seth, 12-11 now on the season, above 500.
11.
Yeah.
Above 500 with abysmal batting through the first part of the season, and that started to turn around. So yes, it's I feel like we've turned a corner to where you can actually allow yourself to start feeling really optimistic about the Astros being a competitive, just a threatening team this year.
Yeah,
certainly it doesn't have the same feel of any of the golden era, obviously, but the way Cam Smith has been playing obviously is really good. Blanco and having his off-season training approach changed drastically. It seemed to hopefully that was the issue.
Yeah.
And it was as simple as that, and now he's back on track.
Well, if it starts to feel like the good part of last season, but like a month earlier, this team's gonna be in good shape, you know? Like
their
offense is essentially being carried by like three guys right now. You know, like Jake Meyer's hitting way over his head. Jose Altuve has been Altuve without the pop. Like he's been doing things out there. His batting average has been decent. And then, it's a different person each night, maybe being the third guy. You know, Jeremy Pena's done some decent things offensively. Jeremy Pena's got a 13-game hitting streak right now, and he's batting like 230.
Yeah,
thing.
Well, it's one of those things, too, is just like with a lot of the guys last year where the start was so abysmal that it takes a little while for you to dig your way out of it.
Yeah.
I think Pena defensively, remember where – last year was that it was just a really weird year where he was still making the incredible plays, but then just had so many strange errors and bad throws that were uncharacteristic. He seems to have cleaned up all of that up, and now he's making these jump throws seem like they're no big deal.
Yeah,
that part of it is very, very encouraging, and that is where defensively, including Christian Walker, you know, because Christian Walker, he's had a couple of flubs here and there, but he's also made some great, great plays that Jose Abreu certainly would have played. In a game like last night where, okay, it was a nice win. Classic Astros would have won that game 12-1.
Yeah.
But they made hay on a lot of soft contact, and you've got to be playing really good defense to take advantage of it. They made some great defensive plays last night.
Yep, they did. They win 5-1, and if the bats start coming around, I think they're going to be in good shape. Christian Walker had 3 hits last night. Someone pointed out on the text page, Christian Walker's 3-for-3 and is now batting .188 on the season. Yeah, he's got a lot of digging out to do, but he's got a body of work where you say, okay, if he starts hitting, then you feel pretty good about him.
I don't think that it's very, very, very unlikely that for the rest of the season half the Astros roster is going to be under the Mendoza line.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't expect that to happen.
That they're 12-11 with the team hitting this badly is a little bit of found money, if we're being honest. So that's the Astros. They try to go for the sweep, tonight. 6:40 first pitch at Daikin Park against the Blue Jays, and it's off to Kansas City this weekend. The Texans yesterday, they had a couple of their new guys meet with the media. Cam Robinson, their new left tackle, at least for a year, it would appear, met with the media yesterday. Why was Houston such a great fit for you, Cam Robinson?
Obviously, great coaching staff, great players, great quarterback, great culture. It was easy for me. I live in Dallas, Texas, so it's right down the road. Family, it'll be accessible for family. My girlfriend, my son, my mom, sister, all my friends. So that definitely played a part into it, too. But ultimately, I just felt like this was the right pick, just based on the culture, based on the coaching staff and my teammates I'm going to be playing with.
Yeah, the thing about Cam Robinson is that, you know, he had a weird year last year where they traded him midseason, and he'd been playing well enough. Like, he's playing like his typical self when he was in Jacksonville. He went up to Minnesota, and it was a scheme change. It wasn't the same fit for him, and he didn't play nearly as well as he typically does. And I think that I would guess there's a good chance that he had a three-year offer from another couple teams, but that he liked his opportunity with the Texans and that he signs this one-year deal and figures, okay, I can translate this into a, you know, he's going to be 30 this year.
Yeah.
May have got one more big deal left in me, especially if I can stay healthy, that I feel comfortable with him at left tackle. Mm-hmm. It's not like all of us. It's not like I feel like, oh yeah, with him at left tackle is going to be an awesome offensive line. It's that he's completely 100% a starter on a lot of NFL teams.
Yeah.
And if you can round out the rest of the offensive line, I'm good and comfortable with that. And who knows? Maybe they get the absolute best version of him and they extend him or what have you. But he's a guy that comes to the Texans knowing that guys have either gotten extensions from the Texans or they've parlayed it into a better deal somewhere else the next year.
Yep. Nope. Absolutely. Here was C.J. Gardner-Johnson, another new Texan safety they picked up in the trade with Philadelphia for Kenyon Green. This is C.J. Gardner-Johnson describing his style of play.
Get the ball, hit hard, and I guess they talk crap. But, I mean, I'm one of the most winning safeties in football right now. So, I think what I bring here is just culture that we should all technically have in us already. I always played winning football before. This team full of guys that's been in great colleges from Bama to LSU, Florida State. We just got to continue to do what we've been doing since we were kids. At the end of the day, it's not hard. Go out there and trust each other and trust what Coach D'Amico is telling us and go win some football.
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
You know, a defensive back room with a good culture in it is one of the most fun and entertaining groups in all of sports.
Yes.
Because, and especially when they've got a couple of high-energy guys like C.J. Gardner-Johnson, there's just a whole lot of confidence and a whole lot of personality. And I feel like All those defensive backs for the Texans have talked about how much fun they have and how much they care about each other.
Yeah.
And that trust is huge with the defensive backs because more than anything, you want to have a defensive backfield that, like, hey, when the safety screws up, the corner isn't pointing at the safety or vice versa. You know, the guys that are desperate to point out that it wasn't actually their fault on a play. And that's the must-have element to have all of that trust, and I feel like these guys are wired that way.
Yeah, I think so, too. We'll hear more.
I think C.J. Gardner-Johnson is probably going to really enjoy his time in that defensive backstrom, however long he might be.
Because he doesn't
stick around places a long time.
1 year. He's kind of a vagabond, yeah.
Yeah.
So we'll hear more from C.J. Gardner-Johnson a little later in the show in the 8 o'clock hour. Rockets back in action tonight, trying to even their series with the Warriors. At one apiece. Warriors, of course, took game one on Sunday night, 95-85. The opening weekend of the playoffs, the NBA playoffs, delivered big ratings. The ratings with the NBA has been a topic the last few years. The ratings generally have been down for the NBA, but this was the most watched opening weekend of playoff basketball in 25 years. That four-game Saturday, four-game Sunday weekend that I love. It's one of my favorite kind of underrated weekends. Eight-game schedule averaged 4.4 million viewers per game. What does that mean? Well, they were up 17% from last season. Game one of Orlando and Boston averaged 6.7 million viewers, the second most watched opening round game one ever. It feels like, Seth, over the last couple months, like every sport lately is setting viewership records. It just feels like people are into watching sports more this year. For like with this NBA stuff, the March Madness stats you and I hit, you know, a month ago, whenever that was. The Masters a couple weeks ago had huge numbers. I don't know what it is, but it just feels like in the NFL, just they continue year over year to continue to pop. And the college football playoff popped huge number. You know, like people are watching their sports, it feels
I wonder how much of it also has to do with the fact that they're keeping track of the digital side of things more. So that maybe that's who knows? That's all the nerdy side of it.
Yeah.
I care. You know what I care about, Sean?
What?
My pick'em. With the Rockets tonight, Aaron Holiday. That's the guy to watch. So, because I know he didn't play last week on Sunday.
Yeah.
And the ball was sticky. There wasn't, you know, the spacing was an issue. So having a guy who can hit threes out there is, we'll watch for Aaron Holiday. Might be a factor tonight.
Is he? Okay, so he's one of your
Udoka had mentioned fantasy. Him. Yeah. I don't know yet. I haven't even looked to see if I can, if he's on the board at underdog.
But, yeah. Dude, if he gets in for 10 or 12 minutes, his number's going to be low on whatever that is. That's not a bad sneaky one right there.
Yeah.
Him, you know what his biggest redeeming trait might be? Is that he's not Fred VanVleet. for a lot of Rocket fans after game one. Yeah, I hate to say that about Fred VanVleet, but so many Rocket fans are like, can we mix somebody else in for these four? Can Fred play 32 instead of 42 minutes? Would that be okay? Can we do
yeah,
that?
And especially with the, hey, Udoka, I was bragging about how great you're going to be with the rotations and all of that in the playoffs. Yeah. And injecting a little Aaron Holiday into our veins. You know, I don't know, I have somebody who can shoot 40 or 50% from the field even.
Yeah.
Can we get that?
Well, yeah. Let's get into that in the next segment. There's some scary numbers that if you're still bullish on the Rockets winning this series, and I am, I think they can win this series still. It's 1-0. It's not that big a deal. But there's some numbers having to do with the backcourt that are a little bit scary as it pertains to this matchup. We'll get into that and a ton of football in the 7 o'clock hour. Nice long segment coming up here. Stay there. You're listening to Payne and Pendergast.